Welcome to Career Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
Today's podcast, 5 Ways to Master Horstman's Third Law of Interviewing, Part 2 of 2.
This guidance answers these questions. How should I behave during an interview? Must I smile during an interview? And how do I show a positive attitude during an interview?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Do you want to grow your influence at work this year? Our Effective Manager conferences show you exactly how to present yourself professionally, communicate with clarity, and collaborate more effectively. These behaviors can make work easier and your career stronger. Learn more at manager-tools.com/training. Now we're going to move into handshake. And folks, while smiling is crucial because it's your first impression around energy in terms of your communications with the interviewer, the handshake is really second. I mean, before any words are even being said, your hands are touching each other. And too many folks, once the first eye contact is made and they're thinking so intently about smiling, go right back to their normal handshake, which for most people is not that good.
Oh my gosh.
Bit of a dead fish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The smile happens, and you just keep your energy up right into your handshake. That's what you want. Think of it as in a positive sense. If you can nail the smile and the handshake right at the beginning, that's going to feel good. That's a positive feedback loop for you and give you yet more energy and positive attitude to carry you through the entire interview. Putting out this energy early will give you some back. It's neat. Usually energy goes out and it doesn't come back ever, right? Positive emotional states are not zero-sum games, thanks to the way the human brain works, which is pretty incredible. It's not ruled by the law of scarcity. It's ruled by the law of abundance. The more you give, the more you get. Give more and feel yourself getting.
Absolutely. So those people who are maybe new to the Manager Tools community might be wondering, how do we show energy with a simple handshake? Well, folks, you have come to the right place. We have got an entire podcast called The Secrets of a Great Handshake. And if you've listened to the Handshake Cast, if you're a longtime Manager Tools community member, you've probably listened to it. It's one of the ones we talk about all the time. If you've listened to it before, then you probably know what it's not. A good handshake, that is. A good handshake is not the squeezing pressure you apply to the other person's fingers. Squeezing their fingers is not only not the way to project energy, but it's also a way to send a message of physical strength and often a lack of subtlety and professional respect and demeanor. So squeezing the fingers is not what we want to do.
Now, we're giving you an abridged version here because for many years, I think for 15 years or so, Sarah, the longest single part Manager Tools cast was the Handshake Cast. And it was 55 minutes long. And there are 10 criteria for handshaking. And you might ask, Mark, how do we know that? Well, I was paid by the US State Department to teach handshaking and also culturally different handshaking. Although I will tell you, there are very little differences in cultural handshakes, unless you're talking about royal family or some very unusual, very exceptionally rare circumstances, which everybody always seems to harp on. But the fact is, the vast majority of handshakes are the same the world over. And so it's a 55-minute cast. If you really want to dig into it, if you want to have a great handshake, that cast will teach you, but we'll give you some high-level stuff, okay? Most people think about squeezing their fingers. That is not the key determinant of a handshake. The most important thing in great handshakes is you must meet the webbing of your thumb and first finger, forefinger, with their webbing of their thumb and their forefinger. Okay? That webbing in there, when you open up, when you put your hand in front of your face and your fingers are up and your thumb is out to the side, that angle between your thumb and your first finger, that's the webbing we're talking about. And the entire handshake hinges on whether or not you seat your webbing into their webbing. Okay? Okay, so that's first. And again, in the Handshake podcast, we go even more detail, more tactical, annoying tactical detail, as manager tools and career tools like to do. Okay. Then you want to move toward them and holding your elbow close to your side. Don't get all floppy on us. Keep all of your energy directed toward the other person. Fully project your hand toward your interviewer.
Mm-hmm. Now, folks, that's the setup piece, but what really seals the deal, again, you want to show energy in your handshake, is by what we call pushing them back. Now, again, without revisiting the entire handshake cast, what we mean is that when you go web to web and you're stepping forward, you're going to put a little bit of extra speed behind your hand as your hands meet. What will happen, or what will this will cause to happen, is the other person's hand is going to be pushed back ever so slightly. And once you feel that their hand has moved back, you can ease off. But it's this pushback that's really the only surefire way to impart energy positively through the handshake.
Yeah, and I'll add a couple of things to that very briefly. It's, again, we're getting into the handshake cast, and we encourage you to go listen to it. But we're only talking about them moving back about an inch. That's all. We're not talking about a foot, okay? This isn't a tug of war that we're trying to win by pushing them back into a pit of mud like they did on Battle of the All-Stars in the 1970s. You want to push them back just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just have their hand just rock. If
yeah, that exactly. Yeah. That's a good way to think about it. Because they're going to push back immediately. When they feel you pushing them, they'll push back and then you're done. And then it's up and down one time. But let me say something else. If you're wondering how much grip strength to have, it's a legitimate concern. They're like, wait, wait, wait. People are listening, sir. And they're going, wait, wait, wait. You're telling me everything I know about a handshake is wrong. Yes, that's kind of true. And it doesn't have to do with my hand grip strength. It has to do with putting the web there and pushing it back. Yes, that's the key. Believe me, that's the key. I taught 10,000 diplomats all over the world. In fact, when I was in Italy and Portugal and Spain, never in France, Italy and Portugal and Spain, they came to me and said, hey, the Italians, the Portuguese, and the Spanish all want to do your handshake class. I'm like, dudes, it's up to you. If you want them to be come over to the embassy, I said, actually, let's do this. Let me get a meeting room at the hotel, and I'll arrange the meeting room. I'll pay for wine and some light hors d'oeuvres, and we'll have everybody come together and visit, and I'll give a brief presentation, and then we'll practice handshaking. And they were like, really? I said, yeah, sure. If it's, you know, yeah. And we rated the best handshakes and the worst handshakes, and then there was more drinking, and it got a little out of hand. But
yeah, sounds like the topic straight far.
Yeah, and they felt the same way. And I'll tell you something. There's a famous sculpt in American history of Lincoln's hand, Abraham Lincoln's hand, during his second election, leading to his second inaugural, which is maybe the greatest inaugural address ever. And the hand, the sculptor, because Lincoln had been shaking so many hands for the previous several days, and including that day, I believe the sculpting took place in the early evening, there was a bar that he was grabbing because his hands were so crabbed into like claws, and they couldn't relax unless you put something in there. And so a bar with like a 2-inch diameter is how his hand is sculpted, because he had shaken so many hands. And most people, most politicians and diplomats have a very light grip to send a message to you. I have to do this 10,000 times. You should have a light grip too. But people don't know that. And they go in and they think it's about grip pressure. And politicians will actually, many of them, I've known many of them on campaign trails, soak their hands at night.
Wow.
Epsom salts and hot and cold and all kinds of things. Yeah, really something. Okay. But if you're wondering what the grip strength is for your handshake, it is very easy. Get a wooden baseball bat, the kind you play American baseball with, okay, even though the Canadians invented it, and hold it by its handle in your right hand, in your handshake hand, with your hand all the way against the pommel at the bottom. Put your hand at your side, down by your hip or your thigh, and hold the bat out in front of you so the bat is level with the ground. In other words, your grip strength is keeping it from falling, from letting the barrel of the bat, the fat part of the bat, fall to the ground. That's the correct grip strength. It took me 6 months to figure out a good analogy for grip strength, and that's the one.
I like that. Okay. So now most folks listening to this cast don't have the ability to book out a conference room and fill it with people and wine. And of course, some light hors d'oeuvres.
I didn't think about that.
Uh-huh. So how do they practice handshaking at home? Well, folks, when we talked earlier about the way you interview yourself, you can also use this videotaping process to videotape your handshake. Now, we mentioned earlier, you don't need a friend. This part you do actually need a friend for. You need a somebody. You can't do this piece alone. But tape yourself shaking hands with your interviewer. Do it at such an angle that you'll be able to tell whether or not their hand or arm, again, did that pushback activity, and just watch your handshake a few times.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, voice volume. Folks, raising the volume of your voice slightly noticeably increases the amount of tonal variation you will speak with, which is perceived as an indication of additional energy that the normal person doesn't have. Now, I know what you're thinking. Well, I don't want to yell. Believe me, you won't yell. The example I like to give people is there's normal conversational tone, and then there's the tone you use when you're presenting at your boss's or your staff meeting, okay? When you're standing up. That's the voice level I want you to have. When Sarah and I are recording this, I am not recording this in my normal conversational voice. I'm probably 20% louder. Now, I've spent the last 40 years of my life presenting in all kinds of places, but I have an extra level of energy. And by the way, I get tired. If I present, like on Tuesday, I'm with the Navy. I'm presenting our Effective Senior Manager Conference up in Seattle. And you and I both, and Amanda, at the end of the day, presenting, you're tired. Your diaphragm is tired from causing your lungs to take in air so you can speak with a little additional air.
Yeah. Oh, even if I record too many podcasts in a day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because it's also about the breathing, I find.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like after I've been presenting or projecting for an extended period of time, I need to take in more air. I've not been taking air in at the same speed and quantity as if I were talking my normal volume and speed.
Yeah.
So sometimes I feel low of oxygen. Like I just need to take deep breaths and just kind of replenish.
Yeah. And folks, what we're telling you here comes from piles of data about tonal qualities and voice projection. And so we're not telling you to yell. We're just telling you to practice raising your voice slightly.
Yeah. Now, folks, we also do have to be a little bit careful here because men tend to be more monotone than women.
Oh, yeah.
And generally speaking, women tend to have not only slightly higher pitched voices, but also more variation in the speed at which they deliver words. Men deliver more steadily, while women vary the speed of delivery. So we're going to get a little bit fancy here as we talk about some of these volume changes.
Yeah. So guys, men, use a small increase in volume to help you change speeds. It will work because your brain will always wanting to be take you back to your normal volume, and that will cause you to change speeds. On the other hand, women, lower your voice and pitch a little bit if you can, and you will be perceived as having raised your volume. But let me also say this. Any one of you, if you're listening to this and you want to record yourself, you want to do a video recording yourself on smiling and on tonal quality and on voice, you can send it to us.
Oh, absolutely.
We will be happy to send you some critiques and feedback on it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, folks, in both cases, the purpose of this is your interviewer will perceive you as being more energetic. A female manager, for example, who lowers her voice slightly but leaves her rate of delivery and tonal variation alone can make quite a difference in the perception of her energy level.
Yeah. Now, look, guys, we get it. This is clearly the most difficult bit of the recommendations that we're making. And it's because we take speech for granted.
Yeah, it just happens.
You know, I've been telling people for years, the reason why our Effective Communications Conference is so focused on practice is because communication is something we do every day. It's critically important. Communication skills, highly effective communication skills, are incredibly valued, okay? And it is all of that, and yet you did not ever get taught how to communicate. You learned it by listening to your parents and to your siblings, right? But you did not get taught it. So the underlying principles and so on are not known. We just behave the way we are and we just communicate the way we do. And unfortunately, that's a negative because there are plenty of people by the time they're 8 or 12 or 14, their parents or someone, a coach, should be talking to them saying, you know, you should work on this because this is going to be, it's going to affect you. Here's a key helping thought for when you do this. Think about making a speech or presenting, okay? We're not suggesting go a whole hog in that direction, but it's unlikely you will because you know you're not giving a speech. You're sitting down, you don't have notes, there isn't a podium, obviously. But thinking that will cause you to raise your voice perceptibly and change the way you deliver your words. You will almost effortlessly be able to deliver more drama, because that's what speeches do, dramatize words. But actually, the reason it dramatizes things is because you're talking more loudly, a little bit more loudly, and probably a little bit faster. You're going to have more tonal variation, and it's going to be easier for people to take your meaning because you're emphasizing differently and more accurately, as opposed to being monotone, which is, in the case of guys, often a real problem.
Mm-hmm. And again, just like in the case of handshaking and just like in the case of smiling, to practice this, videotape yourself. You're going to notice a difference in the impact of your words when you're doing this projection, if you will, versus the way you normally speak. And it might take a couple of weeks for you to make the right adaptations and adjustments, but you're going to notice. And if you don't see a change, ask a friend that's helping you, or to Mark's
point. Oh, they'll notice, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or send us your video. Yeah.
We'd love to help.
And we'll help you out. customerservice@manager-tools.com. Or you can send them directly to Mark, who's already given you his email address in this podcast.
Yeah. I will say, too, as oftentimes as we've recorded this, and it's been heard hundreds of thousands, probably millions of times, the podcast and the interviewing series, I'm amazed at the number of people who don't do it. And I don't assume that people are sitting out there thinking, I don't like these people. They're not nice. I don't trust them. I can't imagine that you would listen to our podcast and think we're not nice. We're not trustworthy. We're just trying to help you. And we're giving away this knowledge for free to make the world and you a better place. You're part of the world a better place, even if we never meet you. And so what that tells me, Sarah, what it has always told me, and it's a bit of a sadness that I don't know how to solve right now. Maybe later I'll solve it. And that is, we don't get any because they're not doing it.
Yeah. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. They're hearing it. They're getting it intellectually, but they're not willing to do the extra 5 or 10 minutes worth of help. I mean, how many practice interviews have we done? Less than 50?
Yeah. Less than 50. I maybe review someone's resume once every 3 months.
Yeah. And we offer it all the time.
Yeah. And that's, I think, the easiest thing. I mean, it's just an email. To me, yeah. That's easy.
We don't want your resume for our purposes, okay? We just want to help you. And we would love it, by the way, periodically when we offer to help people after they ask for my time or we send a long email. I always say at the end, please, please, please tell me what happened in this situation.
Yeah, and sometimes
did you
people
get the
do.
Job? Sometimes they do. The vast majority of times they don't. We're just trying to help folks. And if we can help by watching a video, we will.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Want to level up at work in 2026? Well, start training that helps you perform, influence, and lead. Upcoming cities include Ottawa, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. Explore more conferences and dates at manager-tools.com/training. All right, now we're going to gestures. And this is as simple as making them bigger and faster.
I tell people this all the time at the Effective Communicator Conference. Every human being gestures when they speak. Blind people gesture when they speak, and they use the exact same gestures that the rest of us do. We've been told before, oh, Italians gesture more. That's a total bigoted lie, okay? We don't have time to tell you where it comes from, but it's post-World War II. And, oh, you know, I don't gesture. Yes, you do gesture. And gestures are the same the world over. There are some idiosyncratic gestures in some cultures, but the vast majority of human gestures are the same.
Yeah, we're born with them.
Yes, in fact, the place that controls your speech, your verbal speech in your brain, is right next to the place that controls your gestures. You're intended to do it. We come born with an understanding of what the other person's gestures are. And they are way more important way for being a great energy communicator in an interview. Your interviewer is subconsciously measuring the size and speed of your gestures and drawing conclusions about your attitude and your energy and your enthusiasm levels. Now, I want to do an aside here and give you a scenario. There are two people interviewing for a job. One of them is very mild-mannered. She is super smart and has many friends, but is a reticent person interpersonally. She doesn't smile much. She doesn't make a lot of eye contact. She speaks relatively quietly. But again, her friends love her. Her family loves her. And she's really, really good at her job. And then she's competing against a man who doesn't have her resume, doesn't have her background, hasn't had the accomplishments that she's had, hasn't achieved to the same level she has, and is using all of our guidance. Can he beat her? Probably not. In other words, we're sitting here talking about these ways to project energy. Energy is the single biggest opportunity you have. It's the one thing you can change differentially in every interview. You can't change your background.
Yep.
I assume you're not changing your preparation getting ready for interviews. So energy is one thing you can do in the moment. So energy will not help a C student beat an A student in an interview.
Exactly.
But if there are two B students, energy will win every time.
Yes, that's exactly it.
So the question is, do you know your competitors? No, you do not. So therefore, you have to put your best game face on and do the best you possibly can on the chance that the opposing team, the other interviewees are at your same level. That's really what this boils down to. You're differentially trying to win if it's going to be close. Now, you might say to yourself, I don't want to work this hard. I actually think there's nothing we've said in here that's all that hard. It would take an hour every week. And if you're not willing to give an hour every week for an interview, for a job you really want, you shouldn't have that job.
Someone else deserves it more.
Yeah. If you can't have a lot of energy, going back to gestures, if you can't have a lot of energy now in an interview, when everyone in the world knows that you're supposed to, that that's part of the things that are make up good communicators, is to be friendly and energetic and excited. Ask yourself this, if you have 10 jobs you're interviewing for, and one of them is the greatest job you can possibly imagine, and if they gave it to you, you would never, ever want another job for the rest of your life. It's just perfect, okay? I have a friend like that who works at Disney, and he says, this is all I ever want to do. And the other nine of them are nothing. You don't care about any of them. Doesn't matter what they are, you don't even care. Would you behave the same in all 10 of those interviews? No, you would not. You would be leaning forward. You would be talking louder. You would be smiling more. You would be making bigger gestures in that one that really mattered to you. Why can't you do that in every one?
Yeah, treat them all like they're your dream job.
Yes. It's like the guy who says, you can have diamonds, rubies, or emeralds. Ugh, I want emeralds. You know, I'm going to give you a pile of diamonds, rubies, and emeralds. Oh, keep the rubies and the diamonds. I only want emeralds. Are you kidding me? No. No, this is an incredible embarrassment of riches to have in multiple interviews, and you should be going out and killing it. And if you only try to kill it in one and you don't get it, and then you don't get the other two, which should have been a walk because you were listless and unenergetic and so on, dude, that is on you. So you go in, every time you go at bat, you take your cuts. You take good swings. You take hard swings. You do your very best. Smile at people on your way up because you'll see them on the way back down. So if you can't have a lot of energy now when everyone knows you're supposed to, how much can we count on you to have energy when we need your best at midnight or 2 a.m? I cannot tell you the number of client visits I've been to. Not lately, because my work has changed since I sold Horsemen & Company and we started Manager Tools. But I cannot tell you the number of times when I was 40, 41, and the client said, we got to pull an all-nighter. I said, okay. And I'm the consultant there. And at 2 a.m, one of the 22-year-olds is like, yeah, I got to go home. I can't. And I'm like, what? Boss says we're all staying all night. We got to get this done. You don't work for me, but it's not a career-enhancing move for you to be leaving now, bub. And I was like, yeah, I have energy. If you need me to do this tomorrow night, I will too. Now, if you need me to do it 7 nights in a row, that's bad. We're going to start making bad decisions.
We're going to make bad decisions.
But that's what energy is for. How hard are you? Will you be willing to work? Can you have a normally good level of energy and then when we really need it, put on extra energy? You know, the classic example of this in the modern world is COVID. COVID hit and all of a sudden everything changed. Well, people didn't just go home and sit around and think about things. There was all kinds of new things to be done. How are we going to get people's home computers hooked up? How are we going to make it secure? How are we going to have meetings? Who's going to do what? What are we going to choose not to do because people can't go to stores? I mean, there was a ton of stuff. And if you don't have the extra energy or you say, no, I'm a 9-to-5 person. Frankly, if you have low energy in an interview, you're telling people you're a 9-to-5 person. And I won't hire. I don't know. I probably have very different standards than a lot of people. But I can tell you one, I don't know anybody who's a friend or a colleague of mine who would hire somebody who showed 9-to-5 energy in an interview.
Yeah, agreed. And again, folks, in order to practice this kind of gestural energy, is gestural a word?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. This kind of gestural energy, we recommend that you again use video. So to successfully send a message of your energy and positive attitude in the interview, you need to essentially get out of the box between your shoulders and your torso. So imagine there's an invisible shoebox, boot box really, between your two shoulders from maybe your collarbone down to your waist and out about maybe 6 inches, maybe. That's what we would consider the box. In order for you to show this type of energy, we want your gestures outside of that space. Now, if you have naturally larger gestures, your gestures are naturally outside that box.
Good.
Good to go. You don't have to change a thing. You're done.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to speed, you mentioned speed and size, right? A little bit of acceleration, a little bit more speed, some sharper or quicker movements. That translates as well from an interviewer's perspective into a perception of energy. Think of chopping, cutting, slashing, whirling, exploding, as opposed to moving or drifting or progressing or expanding.
Yeah.
There should be some speed and some sharpness, some acceleration in your gestures, and that will send a message of energy. And it's available to you and everybody else in the same way. And some people think they should just go into an interview and be themselves. Mm-hmm. And what we say is, yes, you should be yourself, but you should be your smart self and understand this is an artificial reality and some different rules apply.
Yeah. And folks, this is simply a part of being a complete communicator. That is being able to use the most effective technique to make your point rather than the one that you're used to. Getting out of your comfort zone to be more effective instead of doing it the way you've always done it because that's what feels best to you. And the way you get to both is practicing on video.
Okay, let's talk about another one. This is my hidden favorite, posture. Here's what's interesting about this. I learned this from an HR person who was really, really smart. She taught me a bunch of this stuff. Once you decide to sit up in an interview, and you should, you've got another tool to express energy in an interview, and that is leaning forward from your position of sitting up. When you have a key point to make, in addition to gesturing and changing your tone of voice slightly, or deeper or faster, your call, however you want to do that, lean forward from your waist as if your shoulders are being pulled slightly towards the interviewer.
Mm-hmm. And folks, this is a big, huge missed opportunity for many candidates. And not using this leaning forward technique does have a hidden downside. The combination of not leaning forward with not gesturing is one of the most common behaviors noted by experienced interviewers for why they choose to label someone as stiff. And folks, stiff is not just a low energy comment. It's an interpersonal comment. It speaks back to someone's flexibility, someone's creativity, someone's confidence. Stiff is a more holistic word than just they sit still a lot.
Yes, exactly. It suggests some internal stuff, right?
It does.
It suggests a lack of creativity and confidence.
Is that fair? Not necessarily,
no. It's not fair.
But that doesn't matter. I mean, it really doesn't. It's a feeling, and people rarely attribute their feelings to reality. So if the interviewer feels that, it's not a good one.
Exactly. Posture in an interview is usually pretty easy, and yet still lots of people blow it. Posture means putting your butt up against the back of whatever chair you're sitting in and simultaneously never letting your back touch the back of the chair, okay? Not leaning forward naturally in terms of 90% of the time in the interview, but just not letting the back of the chair support you as if you're leaning back and relaxed. If your butt is in the middle of the chair and your back is in the back of the chair, it looks like you have lousy posture and we notice, okay? I have seen this happen a number of times. People come in and they want to be calm. They want to be confident. They want to be relaxed. And so they lean back and cross their legs and want to have a fireside chat with me. And it seems fine to me. It seems fine. And when I'm interviewing them, then the next person comes in and she sits up. And it's actually a little easier for ladies to do this because more of them have been taught this. She sits forward on the edge of the chair, and the natural line of her spine is actually slightly forward. Because if you go straight vertical, it's not comfortable. And the person makes a completely different impression. They come across as energetic, forceful, focused, determined. It's a noticeable difference. We don't think you're cool or relaxed if you put your butt toward the front of the seat and put your back on the back of the chair and cross your legs and so on. We think probably you're sloppy and lazy and indolent and unaware of the importance of the interview, particularly since if I'm interviewing you, I am taking notes and I will be perceived as I'm friendly, I'm warm, and I'm grinding.
Yeah.
And to see you sitting there just kind of having a fireside chat with me and all you need now is a cigar or a glass of scotch? I'm like, no, sorry, dude.
Yeah, this is about energy. Again, that leaning back doesn't exude energy. Moreover, if your posture isn't right, going back to what Mark said at the beginning, the desire to lean forward when you're making a point, if your posture isn't right to begin with, it's weird. It looks funny when you try and use it to your advantage
by
leaning forward. You have to like kind of adjust yourself and you got to like move to make it happen.
It's a two-step movement.
Exactly. It doesn't flow. It's more of an adjustment as opposed to just a simple lean. And the energy from leaning forward, it really starts with your posture, which is vertical. So that's why the posture needs to be right, so that you can do the lean forward action and it works.
Okay. Do we want to go on to laughing?
Sure. Let's go to laugh. This is the bonus one.
Yeah. And we added this one as a bonus because it seems, at least anecdotally to us, that the best interviewers always include laughter. I talked to some of my fellow interviewers when I was interviewing on campuses years ago. Gosh, this is early 1990s. And I was amazed at the number of us. Says, oh, yeah, laughter is a big plus. And it never gets taught. It's never on anybody's radar, ever. And usually it's a symptom and not a cause, or a lagging indicator, not a leading indicator, a result rather than a driver. But we do suggest that everyone practice having a laugh during your practice interview sessions. And by the way, laugh at yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly it, folks. Ask a friend to make a small amusing comment or work some funny little story into one of your accomplishment explanations. Make a self-deprecating moment that calls for some humble laughter and see what happens. I mean, we teach at our Effective Hiring Manager event. We teach hiring. And the introduction piece of the EHM includes people getting up in front of the room and sharing their best and worst interview stories. And I would say, and this is no exaggeration, 80% of the people, when they share their best interview stories, it has something to do with the fact that it was so conversational. It was so easy to talk.
Easy.
It was just like talking to a friend. Like it was just, I mean, the two of us just bounced off each other and we were having a chat and there was energy and it was great. And you want to create that kind of moment. And the hiring manager, the interviewer wants to see you be confident enough to be relaxed enough to laugh, which is a sign of the kind of positive attitude that we want to see. So do and practice enough. And again, it won't be awkward when it's important, but you may need to practice it first.
If you need another idea for when to laugh, look for opportunities when the recruiter lightens it up a little bit in the course of the conversation. If there's a chance, throw out a small chuckle or whatever. And I know, we hear you. That's not me. I don't do that. Yeah, you do. You do with your friends when you're relaxed, when you've had a beer or whatever. But if you don't laugh when the opportunity presents itself, you're increasing the chances that you're going to get that stiff label, which just isn't any good at all. And by the way, maybe you won't get a stiff label if you don't laugh, but if you do laugh, you will get points for confidence. Because people who are grinding and in a box and narrow and worried and waiting for the question and thinking that interviews are nothing but questions and answers like an interrogation rather than a conversation, those people are not capable of laughing. They're not. They're only thinking negative thoughts and they're just trying to get out of there alive. The person who laughs says, "You're seeing the real me. This is the real me."
Exactly. All right. So folks, as we wrap it up, remember that you may not be able to rewrite your resume in the next few months. You may not be able to achieve things that you've not achieved before now. Heck, you could be interviewing right now. But you absolutely can change how you show up. In a tighter market, preparation, energy, and enthusiasm aren't nice to have. They are differentiators that will help you stand apart from the others who are also up for that same position, which is why Horstmann's third law exists. Not because ability doesn't matter, but because attitude, expressed the right way, is often the deciding factor when everything else is really, really close. Interviewing may not be a perfect system, but until it changes, the people who understand how it works and work within it will always have the edge.
Ooh, I like that. That was good.
It was good. Thank you, Mark. Right.
I talked a lot this time, but that was fun.
It was really good. It was really good.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much, folks. We hope this helped you. Now help us help others and tell all your friends. And of course, follow, rate, and review our podcast. And remember, 5 stars only, please.